Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for April Idiots Day, April 2nd, 2020. April Idiots Day is traditionally the day people who are pretty slow think of something good to do on April Fool's Day and then go, day after April Fool's Day, and they just miss the whole point. I just made that up, but it makes sense because I've known people who've done that. Anyway, I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. It's another busy, busy day going on in the world. We've got a lot of news to talk about, and we're going to, about halfway through the program, talk to Cam Edwards of Cam & Company, the editor-in-chief of BearingArms.com. He has forgotten more about the Second Amendment and gun rights than most people will ever hope to know, and it's kind of very important right now as people are scrambling and various states and localities are declaring, gun shops to be important, essential stores, and other governments are trying to shut them down. It's nuts. These people are nuts, but our Second Amendment rights are being threatened, and we have to make sure that they are not, especially now. I mean, my God, now, of all times now, they need to be protected because you need to be able to protect yourself and your family. Lord knows I'm ready to do it. So we're going to get the lowdown on him. Plus, it's a different perspective on coronavirus since he lives in a very rural area. He lives on a farm. Guy's got a bunch of goats. So we'll get his perspective. Plus, it's a scary time. He's been very open about it. I'm not being out of school here. His wife is battling lung cancer, and it has to be pretty terrifying time for this because she's getting treatment. This one is going well, hopefully, but now you've got a respiratory disease that is particularly harsh on people with breathing problems. So we'll get into all of that with Cam Edwards coming up, but I'm going to talk about some other stories that are going on right now. Florida has joined a lot of other states in a stay-at-home order. Florida, of course, has a very large elderly population, so it's surprising that it took to this point to get there. I've seen people bitching about it on Twitter, bitching about it on social media, and I understand. Nobody wants it. I don't want it. I'm not particularly keen on this stuff. I don't mind staying at home, but I also like to go out. And you still can, by the way, under these orders, but to bitch about it and say that this is the end, this is DeSantis's doom, how dare he, this is a huge mistake. No, it's not a huge mistake. It's a smart thing to do because the vast majority of people will adhere to it. But here's the deal. This comes to along the lines of my welfare deal with society. And if you're new to the show, you don't know my welfare deal with society. I'll tell you really quickly. Welfare. I'm all for a helping hand to people in need. Lord knows everybody's going to need some help at some point in their life, or most everybody. It should be temporary, but as a trade-off for receiving public assistance, the day you get it, you have to be photographed in your underpants, right? That's it. You just have, and every month that you're on it, you then have to go back in and get photographed in your underpants. Now you're thinking, what are you, a pervert, Derek? Well, yeah, but that's beside the point. Not for this. Not in this way. Everybody's perverted in their own way. I want the photographs to be compared every month that somebody is on welfare. And if a welfare recipient shows up with a new piercing or tattoo, particularly a tattoo, they're off. they're done. They no longer get public assistance. Now, why? Because it shows that your priorities are screwed up. You are on the public dole. You are asking for and receiving public assistance in your living. That means that you are in dire straits without that. Okay, that's when public assistance should be there to help people. But after that, if you then come into money and choose not to spend it in a way that betters your life or save it, but in a way that just gets your sleeve tattoo finished or gets you that fine neck tattoo that you've always wanted, you are too stupid to help. That would be my assessment. That's putting it, you know, perhaps a little more bluntly than most politicians would. But I think that you have to, if you can't understand personal responsibility and you're suckling the government teat, then you got to get off. You don't deserve the help. You don't. And the same thing here with people whining and complaining anywhere in the country that has a stay-at-home order in place. Here's the deal. You sign a waiver that says that you will not seek medical treatment during the duration of the stay-at-home order, plus 15 days after, because the gestation period, they say, is about 14 days. You just throw in another day to make it half an average month and a nice round number. So there, you do that. You got a 30-day stay-at-home order. You sign a decree that says for 45 days, I will not seek medical attention for anything of any sort. Nothing. Meaning I'll remove myself from the way. I will not clutter up anything in the medical. Then you can have your little, here's a purple card where you can, if you get pulled over or a cop's even eyeballing you and you're, I don't know, golfing or wrestling or doing whatever, eating hot wings at Hooters, whatever you're doing, if you can find anybody willing to serve you, then you flash that card and say, okay, well, all right, good. And that card is binding so that if and or when you come down with coronavirus, or anything, really, but particularly coronavirus, you'll then ride it out at home on your own. And good luck to you. I wish you well. The odds are pretty much in your favor, but, you know, you got to ride it out. You got to deal with it. It's all on you. If you sign that legally binding and therefore legally absolving document for everybody else, then you can go about your business. I think that'd be a fair trade. I think that's a decent fair trade, don't you? Because then if you want to sit around and complain about how awful the stay-at-home orders are, okay, now I can understand that you think the stay-at-home things are awful. I agree with you. But they're necessary, right? Unless you can prove they're not necessary. And I would like to also get into whether or not they are necessary. Because, like I said yesterday, I'm still trying to... see, Quinn, get down. Get down. I'm still trying... Excuse me. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around those numbers. Because, I mean, and realistically, the next 2 weeks will be key. If we're going to get anywhere to 100,000 to 220,000 dead in this country, the next 2 weeks, especially in like the next 6 weeks, the next 2 weeks are going to be huge. They're going to be wildly awful if it's true. Now, again, an argument will be made by people saying, well, thank God the stuff that we did managed to mitigate that. I don't know, but they're not telling us. They're saying that the stuff we did, the 200 to 200,000 number is already considering mitigation. So we'll see. We may end up out of this thing hopefully dodging a bullet, meaning not as many people dying, barely any, hopefully. But we may also have to take a serious look at our medical pandemic modeling business here, because they could have really crapped the bed. But I think the possibility of saving lives is worth it for right now. That's not necessarily a popular sentiment with everybody. That's fine. I don't care. I'm the show is my thoughts on the news of the day, not the popularity contest and polling. I'm sure you can find somebody yelling and screaming at the camera about, oh, this is an outrage, or the microphone, this is an outrage and we got to do something about it. Okay, I'm working my way through this one way or another. I can see both sides of it, and I hope that one side is more right than the other, and I hope it's an overreaction and not an underreaction. A guy named Brian writes in, and this is, he doesn't listen anymore, apparently, so he won't hear me give him a shout out, but he writes in, I know you're all in favor of the Northam and Hogan stripping individuals of their liberties, but what's a win look like to them? An individual in their respective states totally reliant on government? Switch to Democrat, Derek. I know you've been infected by Maryland, not coronavirus, for the past couple of weeks. I love getting a kick out of this kind of stuff. But okay. If you want to do that, go out and do it. Live your dream, man. Live your dream. Just promise that you won't sue anybody if you get sick. You won't get any medical attention when you get sick or if you get sick. And you won't sue anybody because you didn't get any medical attention if you got sick. And then you can go do whatever the hell you want. I'm down with that. Hell, that might even be a deal I might take just to be able to get out of the house, maybe go golfing every once in a while, something like that. But if you are willing to take a risk with your health and safety, fine. I don't have a problem with it. If somebody wants to play Russian roulette at home alone, well, you need a different hobby, I would suggest. But I'm not going to try to stop you. It's when you try to force other people to play along with you that I have a problem. It's a hardship right now. But we can survive this. It's more of an inconvenience than anything else at this point. I was thinking about this because we're all worried about the impacts on the economy, as we should be. But I think when people talk about the economy being able to come back and how will the economy be able to come back after this situation, I think people are discounting the idea that people will be able to save a lot of money in this time. Not saying that every once in a while we need to shut down the economy for a month or so because that will encourage savings, but people aren't, think of all the crap you normally buy. You go to Target because you need shampoo or something. And what do you come out with like $75 worth of crap because you're at Target. Like, oh, there's this and oh, there's that. All that impulse buying is gone. You know, it's replaced with impulse buying of 800 rolls of toilet paper, but I bet that's a lot cheaper than the stuff you normally buy via impulse just walking through the aisles of a store. So people are going to have money saved up. So they will go back and spend it eventually. I still don't think there's going to be a mad rush to restaurants unless and until there's a vaccine or a proven treatment. But it's I don't know that that's being factored into it. Once you feel safe going to your restaurant, you go, you know what, I'm going to have a bottle of wine with this dinner. I got a little bit of extra money in my pocket. It'd be irresponsible to blow it all, and I'd recommend saving some of it, but you get the idea. People are able to spend less money if they're being sensible and not panicked buying a bunch of stuff. But I do want to point out one story that is interesting, and I know I have some audio I want to play too in a second. But for the people who insist that lockdowns are wrong and bad and aren't working and aren't worth it and everything, we have a test case. Hello, Bailey. I'm trying to record. We have a test case right now. Sweden. Sweden is not locking down anything. So we'll be able to see which model works best. And I would imagine within the next pretty short period of time. CNBC reports, while the rest of Europe imposes severe restrictions on public life and closes borders and businesses, Sweden is taking a more relaxed approach to the coronavirus outbreak. Unlike its immediate neighbors, Denmark, Finland, and Norway, Sweden has not closed its borders or its schools. Neither has it closed non-essential businesses or banned gatherings of more than two people like the UK and Germany. Sweden's response to the outbreak is being overseen largely by the country's public health agency. It has taken a conspicuously different approach to the coronavirus from its international peers, trusting the public to adopt voluntary, softer measures to delay the spread of the virus. See, they're not denying that the virus exists. They're being more relaxed about it. They're doing the social distancing and trusting people to do it. We have a lot of idiots in this country who don't do that. This apparently laissez-faire approach has attracted criticism from both within Sweden and from a group of epidemiologists, as well as other countries which are locking down public life to curb the outbreak. It's going to be interesting to see if that approach works. I hope it does. I don't want to see anything sweep over everybody. But for those of you who are saying this is unnecessary, we can handle it. Well, Sweden's a pretty small country, especially relative to the United States of America. Maybe you'll get to see what's going on over there. Every country's handling this differently. Panama, for example, has a very novel approach to coronavirus. Fox News reports, quote, Panama is trying to get its residents to self-quarantine during the coronavirus outbreak by only permitting certain genders to go outside on different days of the week. Yeah, that's right. Starting tomorrow, the Central American country is asking only men to visit the grocery stores and other businesses on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, while Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays will be reserved for women. Novel, I guess, maybe. No, that won't work. It's stupid. But the idea, I imagine, has something to do with the possibility of men hitting on women, and if you keep them separate, you'll get social distancing? I don't know. People are crazy. Over in Belarus, the president of Belarus has said that vodka and sitting in a sauna will keep viruses away. Not a lot of science to back that up, but, you know, it's a fun way to spend a day, especially if they aren't segregated by gender over there on sauna days. Turkmenistan has banned the word coronavirus, so anybody found discussing it in public, talking about it in public, can face arrest. That's, I suppose, one way to deal with coronavirus outbreak is to make talking about the coronavirus outbreak like Fight Club. You're not allowed to talk about it. You can't speak about it. And then you can be like China. I mean, I guess that China would be the biggest country trying to pretend that is the case. And then there is Malaysia. They have a very, very interesting approach to coronavirus. BuzzFeed reports women in Malaysia were told to avoid sarcasm and to speak in the voice of a cartoon cat so they didn't annoy their husbands during coronavirus lockdown. Official advisories for the country's women's ministry told women to make sure they wore makeup at home and to avoid loose and casual clothes. So get yourself all dolled up, wear a nice push-up bra and little F me pumps, and put on your best face. And then they didn't advise like giving nonstop foot rubs, but that should be on there. Foot rubs and back rubs, I think, would be a good way to go. So as you see, we're all fighting the virus differently. Good Lord. Some of these people, some of these countries, you wonder how pandemics start in the first place and spread. It's because some leaders are saying, well, all what you got to do is get your wife painted up like a streetwalker and then get shit-faced on vodka. And, you know, maybe they're trying to just increase the population. I don't know. But that'll work. That'll definitely work. What won't work, well, this isn't really won't work, but over in the UK, the police have... political correctness kills, and it doesn't kill by attacking. It kills through benign neglect of real problems. They ignore real problems in society and obsess on fake problems, on made-up problems, on man-made, we have too much time on our hands problems. The other day, the London police, the London Metropolitan Police Force, released a video online letting Londoners know that even in the time of coronavirus, this was on Monday, I think, even in the time of coronavirus, mean tweets are bad and they are illegal over in the UK because they have no guaranteed freedom of speech. They put out this little PSA. They took the time to record this and thought now would be the time for the world to know this stuff. Listen to this crap.
Hate crime is when someone commits a crime against you because of your disability, gender, identity, race, or sexual orientation, religion, or any other actual or perceived difference. It doesn't just mean physical violence. Someone using offensive language towards you or harassing you because of who you are, or who they think you are is also a crime. Another example is someone posting abusive or offensive messages about you online. You might want to shrug it off if it happens to you, but if you tell us, we can investigate and stop it from getting worse for you or someone else. Even if you're not sure if it's a crime or not, you should report it so we can investigate. If it is an emergency, you can call 999. If it's non-urgent, you can call 101, or you can report crime online.
Now you hear that and you think, what in the hell? You have nothing better to do over in London? Isn't there like a rash of stabbings going on over there by immigrants? Isn't there, you know, that kind of stuff that you could focus on? But no, political correctness waits for no one and cares about no body count. But you have this ridiculousness and you think, well, what are you, your differences or your perceived differences? So if I'm talking on the phone to somebody and they think I'm a black guy or whatever, and they go, hey, and they use a racial slur against me, then I can call the police and have them arrested because they perceived that I was some other race and they decided to get a little racist with me? Is that really turning it into a nation of narcs? How about I just don't deal with that jackass anymore and have done with it? But no, the police are ready to come and find you and investigate. And, you know, if you feel like you've been slighted, whether or not you have, don't worry. The London Metropolitan Police shall launch an investigation to find out whether or not you have been slighted, even by proxy. And you think, my God, isn't the UK in the midst of coronavirus? Isn't their prime minister infected with it? Don't they have anything better to do? Those crazy Brits. Thank God we won that revolutionary war. Well, as I used to say, stupidity spreads like a cold on a plane. Turns out stupidity spreads like coronavirus, wildly and quickly. We now have something essentially the same here in the United States of America. The police chief up in Seattle, Washington. I don't know if you can imagine having this much time. Think of, again, a police chief. The cities were overrun with Antifa and all sorts of other problems. One of the heroin culture centers of the world. Yet the police chief, Carmen Best, teamed up with a local news anchor named Lori Matsukawa, I think is how you pronounce it. And they want the world to know that if you are the victim of a hate crime, and by hate crime, they mean hate speech, because they actually say that. If anybody says something mean to you because, or you think it's because of your skin color, call not just the general information number, call 911 like your freaking house is on fire, and we, in the time of a pandemic, will launch an investigation to find out and bring you justice. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. Here's their video.
Washington State is no place for hate. In a show of solidarity between police and community, I'm joined today by Lori Matsukawa.
Thank you, Chief. You know, hate crimes have no place in our community. We're better than that, Washington. We're all trying to deal with the COVID-19 public health crisis together. If you are a victim of a hate crime or hate-based harassment, please call 911.
Exactly, Lori. We will document and investigate every reported hate crime. Even racist name-calling should be reported to police. We take this information very seriously. If you aren't sure if a hate crime occurred, call 911. We are here to help. And we'll respond to investigate.
When we work together,
we're safer together.
If you're not sure if a hate crime occurred or not, call us up and we'll figure it out over the phone. You know, I'm 6'5", and somebody called me Stretch, and therefore I feel violated. Was I the victim of a hate crime, or am I just a hypersensitive pussy? I would hope that the operator would say you're a hypersensitive pussy, but considering they're encouraging people to call 911 to find out whether or not they were a victim of a hate crime, I think it's highly unlikely that the person on the other end of that phone is going to say, "Lighten up, Francis." This is what's wrong with this world. This is what's wrong with this country. Political correctness is going to get us killed. The terrorists don't have to actively try to destroy the United States of America. They just have to wait and let liberals do it internally. Oh, my God. Anyway, before we get to the Cam Edwards interview, I want to play one little montage, because the latest mantra in the media is about how President Trump's dawdling and downplaying of the seriousness of coronavirus cost people's lives. It's all Donald Trump's fault, don't you see? Of course, they called him racist and xenophobic when he instituted the travel bans. They said he was overreacting, and every major news outlet is on record, say, at least running one piece that says, well, coronavirus is nothing to worry about. No big deal. No big deal. The president was not screaming like his hair was on fire at that time. And all these Democrats and liberal journalists, but I repeat myself, are now saying that the president, this is the president's fault, because they're evil people. They really are evil people. Show me somebody, anybody in the country that not, or anybody on the planet that not only advocated for preemptive reaction because China was lying to us and we didn't have the true numbers, but not only preemptive action, but implemented it. Maybe North Korea, because they already had a we're oppressing you sort of policy in place. Everybody else has gotten screwed by China lying, and the Democratic industrial media complex has made that into Donald Trump lied and people died, because Democrats just have a few rhyming chants and they stick with them. They ain't gonna change them. So this is a montage of a bunch of Democrats. Most of these voices you will recognize. The one woman whose voice you likely won't recognize is the director of the New York City Health Commission, which makes what she says even worse. But listen to this montage. This is just a sample of Democrats downplaying coronavirus and encouraging people. All of this took place, by the way, after Donald Trump implemented his order banning travel from China. So it wasn't as though the administration hadn't done anything. It was these Democrats saying, we're going to go again. Whatever Donald Trump is for, we're against. Here's the montage.
The risk to New Yorkers for coronavirus is low.
And our city preparedness is high.
This should not stop you from going about your life, should not stop you from going to Chinatown and going out to eat. I'm going to do that today myself.
Come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
There is no concern at this time for coronavirus in our region.
The Department of Sanitation is ready for Mardi Gras 2020.
The facts are reassuring.
We want New Yorkers to go about their daily lives.
But there's really no need to panic and to avoid activities that we always do as New Yorkers. We are a hardy people.
Americans do not need to panic. What I would suggest, however, is that Americans take this as a wake-up call for seasonal flu.
There's very little threat here. This disease, even if you were to get it, basically acts like a common cold or flu.
So we're telling New Yorkers, go about your lives, take the subway, go out, enjoy life.
And certainly not to miss the parade next Sunday. I'm gonna be there.
If you had to, would you close down the borders?
No.
We need to be honest about the American people. With the American people about the fact that we can't keep people coming here from China.
And transmission is not that easy. I think there's been a misperception that coronavirus hangs in the air waiting to catch you. No, it takes direct person-to-person contact.
We also know that if it were likely to be transmitted casually, we would be seeing a lot more cases.
Right, because this is New York and you're in elevators and trains with everybody all the time.
Exactly. Come down to the parade, go to Chinatown, do whatever you want. Go to a bar, get lit, and then just make out with everybody you see, because look, it's next to impossible to get this thing, and it's just a cold anyway. It's just a cold. Yeah, so remember that as we are lectured over the next coming days. If you notice, the narrative shifts wildly because the Democrats can't find anything that particularly sticks. Adam Schiff is apparently pushing a call for an investigation into the Trump administration's mishandling of the coronavirus crisis. Again, it's a situation in which he and many of his colleagues would have to be called as witnesses because they all denounced the president when he instituted the China travel ban. when the president talked about coronavirus in the State of the Union. Nancy Pelosi stood up and ripped up the speech, said she could find nothing of substance in the whole thing, so it was worth only ripping up. These people are frauds, ladies and gentlemen. Big old frauds. But what isn't a fraud is Life Change Tea. That's right. Go to getthetea.com. Pick up some Life Change Tea. All of these Democrats are full of it. Don't be like them. Get your Life Change Tea. It'll keep you regular. It'll help clean you out. And then you'll get more energy because you'll be able to absorb more nutrition from the food that you eat. It makes you feel better, gives you a little more pep in your step. I drink it every day, just a cup. Don't overdo it. I'm half tempted to like chug a half a gallon, but I know what the consequences are because the owner of the company, Ronnie McMullen, told me not to do that because you'll end up spending the weekend on the toilet. Follow the instructions and it works. I've heard from many listeners who email me and say, you know what, that stuff really does work. Thank you for that. So go to getthetea.com, choose your flavor. They have a whole bunch of different things there. They have great prices and great sales, and add it all to your cart. Then you hit the promo code, you type in Derek, D-E-R-E-K, click apply, you get free fast shipping. You can't beat the deal. You help the show, you help the sponsors, which helps the show, and you're ultimately helping yourself. Getthetea.com. Check out the Life Change Tea. It will change your life. It's the tea that makes you go. Now we're going to go to our interview. Oh, you know, it's kind of funny because I played audio today. I got an email complaint. It's amazing what inspires people to write in. Some people are not happy with the fact that I'm doing interviews. They want to hear one email. It was clear from your comments, but to doing your commitment to doing the show had waned when you stopped cutting audio clips. But then you did a full Hugh Hewitt and turned the podcast into an interview hour. Not interested. Good luck. You'll be missed, Paul. I'm getting a perspective from around the country as this thing impacts the whole country, some people more so than others. If that doesn't interest you, there's nothing else to talk about. And as far as audio clips, I use audio clips when they are relevant. Today I used three. I don't want to play the president every single day at the briefing because not every single day at the briefing is all that different from the day before. Some of it requires too much setup. Some of it's too technical. Some of it's too long. But if you're all pissy because I'm talking to other human beings from around the country, then this isn't the show for you. I don't know what to tell you. I appreciate that you listened. Have a good life. But if other perspectives bother you to that point in the time of a national pandemic, then I don't know. You can probably find somebody just screaming into a microphone for an hour. God knows there are enough podcasts out there. Or you could get your own microphone and scream into it for an hour and see how well that goes, talking about the same thing since it's the only news story every day for a month. Get back to me. Send me the link. I'll listen to your podcast. Somebody's podcast you should listen to is Cam Edwards. He comes up right now. Okay, as we've been doing, we've been talking to people around the country to get their perspectives and pick their brains about how they're surviving self-quarantine, social distancing, and all of that sort of stuff. And this yesterday was Adam Baldwin, and now the guy, he's got to follow him. It's another guy who is right up there, who knows the Second Amendment, knows it better than Adam Baldwin, is Cam Edwards. He is the editor of BearingArms.com. He's got the 40 Acres and a Mule podcast, which you should listen to. And he's just an all-around good guy and one of the all-time great beards you got right there. You almost look Amish. My God. Cam, how you doing?
I'm good. I think I passed Amish about 6 weeks ago. I think I'm now either in Unabomber or Civil War veteran stage of the beard, but I appreciate.
I can see the Civil War veteran.
Yeah, it's
you.
Call me Zebediah.
Zebediah, you live. You're the most rural person we've talked to so far in this. Most people are suburban or urban. It's, I imagine, a completely different experience that you're having. I remember early on when everybody was out of toilet paper, you were tweeting about how they got plenty of toilet paper down here in rural Virginia. Has that changed? Has the sense of I don't want to call it necessarily panic, but urgency changed in small town America?
It has, for sure. It's been on probably a week delay compared to Northern Virginia or the Richmond area. So I went to the store a couple of days ago, saw paper towels for the first time in about a week and a half. Still no toilet paper, but, you know, there's milk, there's meat. You're starting to see ground beef return to the shelves and the chicken breasts. So, you know, the grocery store is getting back to normal. But we just had our first two cases reported in our county yesterday. And our county's emergency management director told our county supervisors, get ready for an explosion of cases in the next few days, because these two individuals apparently had gone to large family gatherings. They had gone to the grocery store. We have two grocery stores in the county. They'd gone to the $3 stores in the county. And so it's expected that there's going to be, you know, widespread of this disease in a county of about 18,000 people. We have no hospital. We have a volunteer rescue squad. They are our ambulance. We have a pretty small sheriff's department. Then we have five state troopers that have been assigned to our county. So, as other counties have been dealing with this for a little while, we are now just starting to have to reckon with the impact of the disease. And really, you know, we were an older county as well. So I suspect that, the 1.5 to 2% death rate that we're seeing nationwide, probably going to be a little bit higher in our county just because of the age of our residents.
I should say that every once in a while you drop out. It's because you are rural. You use satellite internet, which is, you know, an anathema to most people who have podcast listening abilities. But it sounds fine to me, and we can just fill in the blanks that with the rest of it. But now, being rural, there's a trade-off. You know, you get a much simpler lifestyle. For God's sakes, you have goats. You know, it's not something that somebody who lives in Washington, D.C. or New York City has, but there's a trade-off for that easier lifestyle and less stress, and that is fewer conveniences. Are you finding that's a blessing or a curse in a time like this?
There definitely are some trade-offs and some real benefits to being here in a rural area. I mean, I'm concerned about the aging population and the lack of healthcare, but at the same time, it's much easier to socially distance. I'm not stuck in a studio apartment. I can go for a walk. I have a garden. I can hunt if I need to, if things really get that bad. So, all things considered, I mean, I've told my wife several times, I'm really, really glad that we made the decision 7 years ago to leave the suburbs and to move out to, you know, what most people would consider to be the middle of nowhere. Because I am glad that we are riding it out here and not in, you know, Midtown Manhattan.
Right. When the zombie apocalypse happens, you'll have seen it coming, whereas we'll be caught off guard by it. So everything has its advantage. My dad lives very rural in northern Michigan, which makes me feel comfortable. There's one case in his entire county. It's a very large geographic area. He lives in the woods. We used to drive golf balls from the driveway because there's nothing across the street. And there was nothing to hit. So it's as much comfort as you can find in a situation like this. Before we get into the Second Amendment issues around the country, that's your area of expertise. I want to talk a little bit about your situation, because your wife is susceptible. She has health issues. I don't know how much you want to get into. You're very open on social media about it, but it's got to be extra terrifying.
It is a little extra terrifying. My wife has had lung cancer for 3.5 years, and she is doing okay, all things considered. She has, you know, tumors in both lungs. Surgery is not an option anymore. She's kind of gone through all of the standard forms of chemotherapy. But she still feels good. She, you know, for the most part, and we do want to keep her around as long as possible. We would miss her very much. And so, yeah, I've been very paranoid. Like, basically the only She's left the house twice in a month. She went down to her doctor's for her chemotherapy appointment. And then about a week and a half ago, I took her out for a drive one Saturday afternoon. We drove to a local state park. There was nobody around. She got a chance to, you know, go see a different bit of rural Virginia. But yeah, we are, you know, we really are on lockdown. We are not having visitors to the farm. I have seen one of my best friends down here once in the past month, and we stood 15 feet away and we talked to each other for a few minutes. In that sense, you know, the isolation has been, we're pretty introverted anyway, but the isolation has still been hard. You don't know when you have the option to visit people, I think it's a lot easier to be an introvert. When all of a sudden you're mandated to stay at home and not see anybody, I think the most introverted of us becomes a little bit more extroverted and wants that connection. So it has been difficult at times.
But, you know, you have to do it. And we wish your wife the best, obviously, and all of that. It's a different perspective. And it's one that I think a lot of, you know, assholes, quite frankly, don't really consider. Because it's not the people who went on spring break. I'm having a party. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter. It's just fun. It's not about you. You'll probably be fine. There are other people out there who you could infect. And that's, we have such a difficult time looking beyond ourselves and our immediate. And that sort of brings it back home, I think, in a way. So when you see somebody like those spring breakers or the people who, I get it, New York City's very excited to see that the Comfort, the ship Comfort, the hospital ship pulling into the harbor there. But you don't, the reason it's necessary is the people gathering together. So gathering together to greet the ship and applaud it is sort of so stupid. I just don't understand how these people can be so stupid. It has to drive you extra nuts seeing somebody being recklessly, needlessly stupid.
It does. But at the same time, I also have a pretty low opinion of most human beings. So it doesn't really surprise me. Now, I mean, it does disappoint me. And it does, you know, anger me, but, you know, at the same time, I kind of understand the idea that this just doesn't seem real. I think there are so many people that are in denial about what we're actually going through and what we will be going through, the fact that our world has changed right now, and we'll be lucky, you know, to get back to a semblance of normalcy in just a couple of months. And so you still see, you know, the media types online, because, you know, still engaged in the same political snark and bullshit. And, you know, and then you have these people who just, you know, refuse to acknowledge that this is a disease that will kill, you know, it sounds like on the low end, at least 100,000 Americans who would not have died otherwise. I was talking earlier today with my colleague at Bering Arms, a guy named Tom Knighton, who lives down in Albany, Georgia, which is like the small town epicenter per capita. They've got as many cases or more cases than New York City, but it's a town of 60,000 people, so nobody talks about it, right? Mm-hmm. So as of yesterday, they've had 31 coronavirus-related deaths in the past month. And all of last year, they had 13 homicides in Albany, Georgia. So, I mean, if you think about that, in 1 month, they've tripled their murder rate for the entire year, just with coronavirus deaths, and they're nowhere near their peak. And I think, you know, Derek, I think these numbers are so scary, and what we're dealing with is really, truly so frightening that some people just refuse to acknowledge the reality, and they pretend to themselves that they can do these things without causing harm to themselves or putting themselves at risk or putting others at risk.
It's difficult to wrap your mind around 100,000 to 220,000 deaths when we're sitting at just over 4,000 right now. And, you know, because, and especially they're saying the next 2 weeks, it's either going to get very real or the models are wrong and we're going to breathe a heavy sigh of relief. And it's a weird situation for the politicians. Because the absolute best case scenario for every politician that's imposing restrictions on people and doing all of these things, the best case scenario is in a month, we think they were idiots who overreacted. You know, and it, it's a weird situation to root for. But it's until it happens, it's tough to think of those numbers as real.
And this is where it does get frustrating, because you're right. If the best case scenario develops, you're going to have people say, "Oh, see, look, this wasn't that serious," which is not the takeaway, right? But again, it's their denial of reality. And I think, again, you have folks all across the political spectrum who are trying to use this to their political advantage, trying to score cheap political points. I'm a really generally optimistic guy. I don't like to fight online. I think it's a waste of time. But Tuesday evening on Twitter, I just reached my limit. I was like, I'm going to have to log off, or I'm going to start yelling at about 80% of what I'm seeing in my timeline here. This really is one of those moments. There's about 6 weeks or so after 9/11 where we came together as a nation, right? We haven't even had 6 minutes of unity as a nation with this coronavirus. And again, I think part of that is because we're still so early, and there are people who can still claim that this is not a big deal. And you're right. We'll see what happens in another 2 weeks. But I'm not immune to the argument. I understand that. My wife and I have talked before about if because she's at a higher risk, if our lives have to remain abnormal for a prolonged period of time so that the economy can start to ramp up again and people who have had this disease and have recovered can get back to work, we are totally okay with that. I'm fine with, changing my life to keep her protected for the next 18 months or however long it takes for a vaccine to arise and the economy ramp up around those at-risk individuals. But it's not going to happen overnight. And the longer, let's put it this way, the more overwhelmed our system becomes, the less serious we take it, the worse the economic damage is going to be, and then the more prolonged that damage is going to be. I believe.
Well, there's no right answer yet. This is one of those situations where the only right answer comes in hindsight. And the only way you really know what, if you did the right thing, is in hindsight. So right now we have to do the best thing possible. And so when I see people who are, complaining Florida is going on lockdown and, oh my God, this is so bad, this is a stupid decision by Governor DeSantis, I think, okay, I can understand that. But if you sign a waiver that says you won't seek any medical attention ever under any circumstances during the duration of this and 15 days after, and whatever happens, maybe you're fine, you'll probably be fine. But if you're willing to put that risk out there, then perfectly fine, because it's not about you. It's about the other people you're making that choice for. And I don't know. We're a nation of rugged individualists, and that's what makes America great. But yeah, we can also be, we have a lot of selfish douchebags, too.
Well, we do. And, I'm not even so sure that selfishness is, I don't want to go all Gordon Gekko and, say that greed is good. But, personal interest, personal self-interest, I think is part of human nature. But as you say, sure, if you're willing to sign that waiver, go for it. And I'm sure that there are plenty of people who are. But I think at the moment, it's not even about, we hear Governor Cuomo talk about, you're protecting your grandma if you're a young person. It's not even to me about protecting your grandma or protecting my wife. It's about right now at this moment, it's about protecting the doctors and nurses who are treating these patients. It's about protecting the firefighters and the EMS workers and the police officers who are, the front lines right now of our first responder system. And they're starting to become infected and overwhelmed. And we're seeing deaths within each and every one of these communities. That if you want to look, the situation that we're in is bad enough with the pandemic. But if you want to add in social upheaval and social turmoil and an unraveling of the social fabric, the way to do that is to cause these cases to spike and to do so rapidly. Right. So I would prefer not to have all of those extra crises to go along with the health crisis that we're in. I'm a little concerned that we're going to see that at least in a couple of American cities. I don't think we're going to see the downfall of civilization or anything, but in some of these cities that do become overwhelmed, because in part of the lack of social distancing, I do think that there are going to be far more repercussions than just an overwhelmed hospital system and a needless number of deaths.
That is true, and that's a nice segue into your area of expertise, and that is the Second Amendment. We have seen in the last month a massive increase in the number of background checks through the FBI for firearms purchases. Actually, it's in the busiest month ever on record. We've also seen a push by gun control groups to declare gun stores and gun manufacturers as non-essential, essentially trying to shut them down. Tell us what's going on the Second Amendment personal protection front.
Sure. Well, I mean, we can start with the background checks. So NICS released, the National Instant Check System has released their raw numbers for March. Now, these include both checks for firearm purchases, but also some states, they do daily checks for like firearm owner identification cards, things of that nature. So it's not a perfect snapshot, but what we do know is it's a record number. More than 3.7 million background checks conducted. That's about 900,000 more than were conducted in February of this year, and about 1.2 million more than were conducted in March of 2019. So these are staggeringly high numbers, right? And what we're hearing anecdotally from a lot of gun store owners and employees is that about half, in some cases more, of these customers are first-time gun buyers. They're people who haven't owned a firearm before, but they're coming in and saying, I want a gun for personal safety. And they'll ask, okay, well, what are you thinking about getting? Whatever you have, whatever you've got left on the shelf, that's what I'll take. And I don't think that that is an unreasonable fear, because again, you're right. We don't know what the next 2 weeks are going to look like. Could we be starting to return to normal? We could. Could we be seeing in some cities a rise in violent crime and a fraying of the social order? We could. Am I rooting for, the first option? I certainly am. But it is not unreasonable to be concerned about door number two and what lies behind it. So, to that end, in some states like New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Washington State, New Mexico, Maine, I think there was at least one or two others. You had governors declare that gun stores were not essential businesses, that they had to close. California left it up to the counties, and so there have been a number of counties that have done this. The good news is that over the past week and a half or 2 weeks, Second Amendment organizations have really come together, and they don't always work well together, but they're working well together right now, and they are teaming up to challenge these orders in states around the country. They just filed a lawsuit in Northern California yesterday, and a number of states have actually reversed their decisions, either based on these lawsuits or the Department of Homeland Security came out with revised guidance for the critical essential workforce this past Saturday. And they included the firearms industry, whether it's manufacturers, distributors, retailers for firearms and ammunition. The federal government now considers that industry to be a critical industry. And some states have looked at that and said, okay, we'll allow the gun stores to reopen. A couple of states still have not. But I'm hopeful that, in the coming days, we'll see some movement there. But, if we had not seen the closure of these gun stores in populated states like New Jersey, Los Angeles County had gun stores shut down for several days, I think we could have easily seen more than 4 million background checks performed in 1 month.
What is the justification for these declarations that it is not essential? What are they trying to say? Well, it's like it's not food, it's not water, so you can.
Yeah,
you
can, I think so. And keep in mind, most of these folks have not come out and said anything specific about why they've excluded gun stores. They have not made a big deal out of it, right? And I think that's because they know that it's a political misstep to try to prevent people from exercising their constitutional rights at this critical time. I mean, we've seen anti-gun governors like the governor of Illinois, governor of Connecticut. They actually came out and said gun stores are essential, which was shocking to me. But I think they understand that, A, people are going to freak out even more if you deprive them of the ability to acquire a firearm and ammunition if they want one right now. And B, there are some serious constitutional questions about whether even in a state of emergency, you can simply deny people their right to keep and bear arms. Because if you're denying someone the right to acquire a firearm, then you're denying them the right to keep and to bear. Gun control groups are out there trying to convince governors to actually shut down gun stores. Every Town for Gun Safety sent a letter out across the country today or Tuesday in which they try to lay out the constitutional case for closing down gun stores. And it's such a weak argument. Basically, they claim that because the Supreme Court ruled in 1986 that one bookstore could be shut down as a public health nuisance, that the entire firearms industry could be shut down during the state of emergency. It's absolutely asinine. I don't think they're getting anywhere with their argument, thankfully, but that's the argument that they're trying to make right now.
Now, you monitor these things, and it's probably too early to tell, but the argument that the left always makes, the anti-gun left always makes, is more guns means more gun violence, more victims of gun crimes, accidental shootings through that. Has there been any uptick in the reporting of that? It's too early to get statistics, but has there been any indication that any of the standard arguments that they make have come true?
No, not really. You know, their big arguments right now, well, their public arguments are we're concerned about first-time gun buyers and accidents. And we're concerned about a rise in domestic violence. We're concerned, about people's safety. Behind the scenes, where they're talking to themselves, they're concerned about the Trump administration recognizing the critical nature of the firearms industry. And frankly, they're concerned because they're losing the argument in the public square. You know, their argument for years has been, don't own a gun. That's their definition of gun safety. Don't own a gun.
Right.
And right. We just saw a record number of Americans say, screw you, I'm going to go buy a gun. And that's why I think they're really freaking out here, because Americans are just rejecting what it is that they're saying. So, you know, gun owners, too, are concerned about the number of first time gun owners who won't be able to get to a range right away. They won't be able to take an NRA basic pistol course. There's been an incredible amount of outreach online from organizations like the NRA, the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Individual firearms instructors, USCCA has done a great job of putting out online resources, whether it's videos or written materials, to at least get the basics of gun safety, gun handling, how to safely load and unload a firearm, how to safely store a firearm, into the hands of these new gun owners. And it's Second Amendment organizations that have been doing this, not these so-called gun safety organizations that have really been engaged in this outreach. So that part's actually been really great to see. I'm concerned about an overall rise in violent crime, not just domestic violence, but I'm concerned about the societal effects of us all staying cooped up in our homes for a month. Certainly, you know, that would include domestic violence situations, but I don't believe the answer is to shut down all gun stores and deprive every American that's not currently a gun owner of their right to be one.
What is a good resource, Cam, for first-time gun buyer who, for lack of a better phrase, panic bought without mm-hmm. being able to go to a range, without being able to take a gun safety course? And, you know, the instruction manuals that come along with it, I suppose, are fine, but they're really dry and you can't really... It's not the same as seeing it done. Where's a good resource for people to go to learn how to handle the weapon they just bought?
Yeah, there are a lot of resources out there, but one that I've been recommending lately, there's a guy named Ryan Kleckner. He's an Army veteran. He's an attorney. He's a firearms instructor. And he has a website called Guns University. And he has a whole section there, Guns 101, that he has put together specifically for first-time gun buyers. And so there is a ton of resources available there. So it's Guns University or Gun University, Guns 101, gununiversity.com.
Is there anything else we should be aware of on the Second Amendment front? Because if anything, this proves that the left are opportunistic when it comes to the Second Amendment. And there's a lot that goes on under the radar. And if they look at a pandemic, they look at a panic, they look at fear as we can put those SOBs out of business, at least temporarily. What else is going on out there on the Second Amendment front while we're all sort of distracted by the fear of getting our loved ones sick?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, a lot of the pretty much every legislative session has shut down for the time being. And as far as the gun control groups go, right now their big effort really is on closing gun stores. I suspect that, you know, if we do see any sort of civil unrest or anything of that nature, their next step would then be to pressure lawmakers and local officials to enact emergency orders that could restrict or attempt to restrict the transportation or even the possession of firearms. But we haven't seen that yet. And hopefully, again, it doesn't get to that point. In the meantime, I mean, what they're doing is really laying the groundwork so that when things do return to some semblance of normalcy, they can do everything in their power to make it as hard as possible for Americans to exercise their rights. I mean, this is, I think, a real turning point for the gun control movement, whether they recognize it or not, because they have spent so many years branding themselves as common sense gun safety. They're not opposed to the Second Amendment. They're just in favor of a few little, you know, regulations here.
Right.
They don't even call it gun control, right? And now, in a time of emergency, their messaging is, we have to do whatever we can to prevent people from exercising their Second Amendment rights. And I don't know how they actually come back from that. So, again, whether they realize it or not, they've actually changed. And I think they've revealed themselves for who they've always been, but their messaging has certainly changed. And I don't think it's going to be easy for them to come back from that.
Oh, when you have the entire media complex on your side, it's not that hard. let me ask you one last question, Cam Edwards, because we're seeing regulations, state and federal and local regulations, being wiped clean in order to move heaven and earth to sort of spur medical innovation, make it easier to move equipment around, things like that. Are there any jurisdictions that have made it easier to procure a firearm in this time? There's like Maryland. I don't know. Somebody called my radio show the other day and said, they took the firearms class because you're required in order to get a handgun, you have to take a class. And mm-hmm. I can't imagine that classes are going on right now. So you, to my mind, you can't do it. Somebody says you can, but they didn't go on air. So I wasn't able to question them about it. Are we seeing any loosening of it to make it easier to temporarily say, okay, you can buy the handgun, and when this is over, you got to take the class, something like that? Is that happening anywhere in the country?
Not that I'm aware of. What we are seeing are a lot of sheriff's offices trying to adapt so that they can continue to accept concealed carry applications. They're moving their, application process outside. They're, taking applications, just telling people to roll up in the parking lot. We'll come out. We'll meet you. They're setting up appointments. Yeah, because again, a lot of these sheriff's offices are concerned about exposure to their deputies and what that might mean for, their ability to get out on the streets. But, the first response from a lot of law enforcement agencies was, well, okay, we're shutting everything down for 2 weeks or a month. And we've actually seen, again, a lot of sheriffs dial that back and say, okay, here's what we're going to do going forward. And here's the plan. And it's not perfect. And we understand it's not perfect. And I think gun owners understand that this is not a perfect situation. And we're willing to grant these guys some leeway, too. It's when you tell us, no, there's just no way. That's when there's a problem, right? We're willing to work with these folks. And I think that we are starting to strike a balance right now. I've actually been, for the moment, with a few exceptions, like Governor Gavin Newsom, L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva, and guys like Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey, I've actually been fairly impressed with the recognition of our right to keep and bear arms by so many jurisdictions across the country. We have not seen nearly as much shenanigans or malarkey, as Biden would say, when it comes to, screwing around with our rights right now. I'm really, really pleased that that's been the case.
I think that part of that is sort of passive acknowledgement that if things do get really bad, you're kind of on your own if you're in an area where things get bad. So, you kind of got to not pump the brakes necessarily, but look the other way to sort of let people still continue to exercise their Second Amendment rights. It's a scary, scary time. Tell us about bearingarms.com while I got you, and what kind of things people can follow there.
Sure, you bet. So bearingarms.com, we are covering the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation, but that includes armed citizen stories. We're starting to cover more coronavirus-inspired crime. There was a story I wrote about today out of New York State where a woman was shopping at a Dollar General. She was wearing a mask, and as she's leaving, these four teenagers came up to her, accused her of having the coronavirus. They then repeatedly punched her in the face. They stole her wallet. They stole her keys. And then they took off. When police caught them, they arrested them. They took them to court. And because of New York's bail reform laws, they're already back on the streets. They're like, okay, we'll see you in a month or two. Go on. That's something else that I think is going to be a growing issue going forward over the next few weeks, is that not only in New York with their bail reform laws, but we've just seen a number of jurisdictions around the country say, we're not going to make arrests. We'll issue summonses. We'll, make citations. We may take somebody temporarily into custody, but we're not going to take them to jail for a pretty large number of crimes. And some of them, including things like burglary and things of this nature. These four individuals all charged with felony assault, and they were still back on the street within a matter of hours. So, we're covering stories like that as well. It's not just about the latest legislative or legal news when it comes to, you're right, to keep it arms. We're taking it into the real world as well.
Everybody should check out bearingarms.com. Everybody should follow Cam Edwards on Twitter. Cam, give my best to your wife, and pet your goats and your kids, and try not to go insane with a bunch of kids running around the house stuck in. I'm lucky my kids are under three, so they don't realize the passage of time yet. So they don't know what they're missing. Your kids are older. I can only imagine. So thank you for your time.
Absolutely. And everybody be safe. Everybody be well. And if you do need to take a field trip, our farm is big enough. We can still maintain proper social distancing, and the kids can hang out with the baby goats for a couple of hours if you need to get out of the area. All right.
There you go. Goat farmer extraordinaire and Second Amendment expert Cam Edwards. Thank you, Cam. Be safe.
Thanks, Derek.
Love talking to Cam Edwards. He's such a smart, down-to-earth guy, unlike me, who's just dumb and a douche. Anyway, thank you guys for listening, tuning in, telling a friend. patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast if you want to help out, but I know that it's a tough time for everybody. So I will just say thank you and look forward to seeing you back here on the tomorrow, on the Friday show, when it's the actual interview show. Got a good guest lined up for that too. Another old friend of mine. That's all I'm willing to say, because it could completely fall apart. Again, as always, paranoia reigns supreme. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.
If you aren't sure if a hate crime occurred, call 911.